It is hour number two of Midday with Trey and BK. At 11:45, our audio of the week includes Shaq explaining how he passed the ACT. Tinder time is at 11:30. Wags, what is the headline for today?
We got a menace from the AFC North. Gonna need a new home.
All right, and in mere minutes, we're talking about the history of the jump shot and the man who introduced it to basketball, local filmmaker Jacob Hamilton. I'm Trey Elling. Brad Kellner is sitting across from me. Adam Wagner behind the glass. Text us. The Specs text line is 337-3776. And give us a follow on Twitter as well, at Courtesy Wave, at Brad Kellner, and at Not the Fake Wags. And without further ado, we welcome Jacob Hamilton into the studio. He is an Austin-based, award-winning filmmaker who has been at it since 2003. His newest film is Jump Shot, a look at the history of basketball's greatest invention and the mystery of the man who was behind that jump shot, Kenny Sailors. He is not only believed to be the inventor of the jump shot, but just an all-around awesome human being. The film Jump Shot premiered at South by Southwest this year, and Jake is in studio with us now. Jake, thank you so much for the time. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the film, South by Southwest is obviously a crazy time. Yours is one that received quite a bit of buzz. It premiered at the Adam Theater early in the week. I think there were several showings throughout. Just how was South by for you this year?
South by Southwest was amazing. It's an exciting thing for me to be able to roll out my directorial debut at a local film festival and something as prestigious as South by Southwest. And we couldn't have asked for a better time for the film. It was well received by audiences. We had great crowds, an awesome premiere, sold out theaters. Our second and third screenings, and then we're selected for an additional buzz screening by the festival. So
on Saturday, right?
On Saturday, yeah. So it's, yeah, pretty surreal.
Obviously, South by Southwest happens in early to mid-March, and so does the start of March Madness, the start of the NCAA basketball tournament. When you were starting to put this together, considering the college basketball element to it with Kenny Sailors and really making a name for himself with Wyoming, winning a national championship with the Cowboys, at Madison Square Garden versus St. John's way back in the day. Were you targeting March as a release date for this movie for those reasons?
Well, I could tell you that it was definitely in mind. I mean, that was something, it couldn't have been a better time to roll it out leading up into March Madness like it is. We're glad it worked out.
And not just that, but you guys had a ton of different participants who talked about the importance of the jump shot, and also Kenny Sailor, some guys learning about him for the first time. Guys from Dirk Nowitzki to Stephen Curry to Bob Knight, Kevin Durant, a whole lot more names as well. At what point did you start getting some of these bigger names on board to lend their voices to this film?
Yeah, well, I mean, to go back even a little bit further, this is something I started, this project I started a little over 7 years ago. And when you're making a documentary film and you're kind of starting from the very beginning, like we were not having a ton of connections in the basketball world, you start with a small circle, like who knew Kenny? How can we get in touch with them? And then from there, you begin to, you know, it's a snowball effect of who you sit down with. And we brought on one of our producers, Ty Clark, who has a basketball background, played professionally in Europe, played college ball in the United States, and he knows a lot of these guys. And so he kind of started sounding the horns, knocking on, you know, making the phone call, seeing who would sit down with us and might know about Kenny. And from there, it just kind of snowballed. I think we sat down with Jay Billis at one point in time, and at the end of the interview, and I tell every documentary filmmaker this, at the end of every interview, whoever your subject is, ask them, who else should I talk with? Who else do you think would be great to sit down with and shed light on this? And when we did that with Jay, he was like, well, you know, you need to get in touch with Bob Knight. He's like, here's his secretary's information. Reach out to her. She'll make sure it happens.
Wow.
And then from there, you know, everything just kind of falls in place.
It just gradually got a little bit easier the more people you talk to.
They're like, oh, this guy, you know, he's in it. Well, I'll talk about it. And so, yeah.
So where did you come up with this idea yourself, number one, to make this documentary, but also how did you learn about Kenny Sailors yourself?
Yeah, so, gosh, it was like June of 2011, I guess. I was searching for documentary ideas and actually came across a short two-minute clip of Kenny talking about jumping over his brother on the farm and how he was benched his first year in the NBA because he shot a jump shot. And I was just immediately like blown away that somebody invented the jump shot, just like most people are. I was like, wait, I thought that always existed, and let alone somebody invented it. And I was like, this is absolutely bonkers. And so I was like, well, let's figure out if this guy's still around. Did a little bit of research. One of Kenny's good friends in the film, he actually just recently at that time built a website out for Kenny because he had kind of just came back into Laramie, Wyoming, and that community, and people were starting to reach out to him. And, you know, a 90-year-old guy isn't going to be the first person to, like, take all these calls and, you know, answer emails and whatnot. And so reached out to them through the website, and they're like, yeah, let's you know, would love for you to meet Kenny. So I went up there, had breakfast with him, and we talked about the possibility of making this film and what it would look like. And yeah, I think, you know, we're very pleased with how it is and how it turned out. I mean, it's amazing to capture, you know, 90, you know, plus years of a man's life and put it, you know, in a 90-minute film.
And unfortunately, Kenny is no longer with us, although he lived to the ripe old age of 95, which is incredible. And it was also incredible to see how well he was moving around at 90 years old. I mean, he was out on the basketball court,
yeah,
dribbling it around through his legs.
Didn't
want to
bend over, though. Didn't want to bend over to get the rebound.
You know, considering that I'm 41 and I don't want to bend over to pick the ball up half the time,
I don't want to do that, man.
Just how cool was it getting to be around somebody who just seemed like a gracious human being on top of being somebody who was one of the great innovators in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, immediately when you sit down, I mean, Kenny knows no strangers. I mean, he will start a conversation with anybody, you know, standing in an elevator, sitting next to him at a barber shop, like he's going to make a friend. And while you're filming with him, you know, I constantly had that pinch me moments where I'm like, I'm literally standing next to a living legend right now. And how often do we get to do that when we're standing next to somebody that, you know, arguably changed the way that the game of basketball is played, not just, you know, here in the United States, but around the world. Like everywhere you go, people shoot a jump shot. And Kenny is the one that, you know, popularized, created this shot that is used today, the jump shot, the modern day jump shot. And so, I mean, yeah, it's amazing to get to work with somebody of that stature, but then also of his character as well.
It's crazy, right? The documentary, and we want to encourage as many people to check it out as possible, but it just starts, and the story of how the jump shot was created. You mentioned he was just playing at the farm with his brother. His brother was 6'5", and Kenny was like 5'7", and his brother showed no mercy. You know, he was going older brother. Every time he'd pull up for a set shot, which is what you had back in the day.
Those set shots.
We just swatted into the neighbor's house or onto the farm or something like that. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal story. Did he, you know, was he open about talking about this to you right away? Did he tell you everything about the history? I mean, it looks, there's so much information in the documentary, but was he willing from the very jump to tell you all the information that you wanted to gather?
Well, you know, Kenny's a talker. So, I mean, he had no problem sharing his stories. And he'd been sharing these stories for, you know, 70 plus years. So, I mean, he had them dialed in, you know, and so it was very easy on our end to extract that information from him. I mean, we sat down initially with him for like a 3-hour interview, which is brutal for anybody, but you know, a 90-year-old man right, to like go through a 3-hour interview and still remain a good sport by the end of it and be able to recall all these things from 60, 70 years ago. I mean, he knew names, he knew stats, he knew scores. I mean, it's unbelievable how sharp his mind was when we got to sit down with him. We were really, really, really grateful and thankful that it worked out the way it did.
Was there a specific game where Kenny's jumper became the stuff of legend?
Yeah, so there is one game. So Kenny did win a national championship. It was the first national championship in basketball where the NCAA champion played the NIT champion in 1943. And after that, Kenny went and fought in the South Pacific in World War II. When he returned back to America, they gave a lot of these players who went and fought in the war one more year of eligibility since they left school a little bit early. When he came back in 1946, shortly after his return, they were back in Madison Square Garden again playing LIU. And that night, somebody snapped a photograph of Kenny. And I wish I could remember. I know we've done research. I know the name. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. But they had a photographer who doesn't normally do like do sports, live sports. He's actually like a portrait photographer, somebody who took a lot of famous portraits. And they had him on the court. Life magazine had him on courtside, I think, because they maybe knew, this is all speculation now, but they knew that Kenny was going to be coming to town, and he had this jump shot that, you know, was so mystical that everybody was talking about. So this photographer snapped this photograph of Kenny. It's a perfect image, you know. It's he's level with the court taking the photograph, so you see, like, the crazy height that
he is elevated on his jumper.
He said it's one thing to invent
the jump shot. I shouldn't say that. That's nothing. But the fact that the guy who invented it could get so high off the ground at an era where not a lot of people could, that makes it even
absolutely
more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Dirk Nowitzki in the film says, you know, it looks like Russell Westbrook's, you know, jumper right now.
It was an interesting comparison. I like that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he was much better at it than Russell Westbrook is.
Well, I mean, supposedly Kenny said he had a 36-inch vertical. And if you look at that, you believe it. Like, there's no doubt. So
how long did it take? I mean, once Kenny brought the jump shot into existence, even going back and watching some of the clips that you guys had in the documentary from that game against St. John's, which, by the way, even more crazy to me that the fact that it took the jump shot that long to be invented, the fact that the NCAA champion used to play the NIT champion. Like, I can't really wrap my finger around that one now. But how long after Kenny brought the jump shot into existence did other people and did this thing finally start to take off and become a staple in basketball like it is today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, something that we do address in the film is that there were other pioneers who were jumping and shooting the ball. It just looked very different than what Kenny was shooting, which is what players are shooting today. I mean, you have players like Joe Fulks, who, you know, in early NBA set scoring records. But, I mean, his jump shot was a two-handed shot where both of his hands were already above his head, and he maybe got just a few inches off the ground. I mean, he could shoot the ball. Kenny played with him. So, I mean, he knows he had a jump shot, but it's not the shot that Kenny developed. And so, I mean, you can even look back into the early 50s. There was an article written by Jimmy Breslin, who was just a sports writer back then, but he ended up having a lot more acclaim to his name after that and where he went. But he talked about how the jump shot was ruining the game of basketball because it just required one player, you know, to rise up and shoot the ball, and it eliminated, you know, the pass and everything that made basketball a team sport. And so it was, you know, it was like a 50-50 chance if you were to be on a team whether or not your coach would let you shoot it or be happy about shooting it.
About that.
But you look, I mean, you think about it, if you look at the game, you know, two decades ago when the three-point line was introduced and how, you know, the three-pointer, like, you maybe had, you know, if you took that shot in the 90s, early 90s, and you missed it, and it was a bad shot, you got pulled. You know, you're like, you're sitting on the bench. And then, you know, look at, you know, the numbers today and how many guys are shooting threes.
It's like,
so
if you don't shoot 50 threes a game, you're running in practice.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's amazing to look back at the game and see where it came from and where it's going and how it's evolved over that time. And that's what's really cool and exciting, to, like, have all these younger guys like the Stephen Currys, the Kevin Durants, and Dirk Nowitzkis who are looking at this. And they're just, you know, completely blown away by, like, how different the game was. But then we got to sit down and share, you know, clips of Kenny and with them, and they're just, they can't believe, like, how ahead of the game he was for his time, you know, playing in the 40s.
Now, you talk about showing clips of Kenny to these various NBA players, and Stephen Curry is not only a contributing voice on this film, he turned out to be an executive producer as well. Was this something where you started to interview him and talk to him about this project, and he decided he wanted a larger role in it too?
Yeah, so we, you know, you shoot for the stars, you know, you swing for the fences with, you know, who you think you can get and who you hope to sit down with, and so obviously Stephen Curry, you know, greatest shooter of all time, you know, one could argue. It's like we've got to at least make an attempt to sit down with him and include his voice in this film. And we got connected through one of our executive producers, Mary Beth. She was connected to a mentor of Stephen's and KD's who we shared the film with. Now, obviously, this is a rough cut of the film. It didn't have any of these guys in it yet. But he watched it and was just so inspired by Kenny's story. He's like, I really feel like both these guys need to participate in this, and so I'm going to forward this along to them to watch this link. And so we did. And, you know, Stephen specifically, we shared the film. I think he watched it on his way over to China last year before the season got started. And he watched it on the plane, and he got back. And when we finally connected, he was like, man, how, like, yes, I want to be a part of this. Let's do
awesome.
It. And we were like, that's fantastic. So let's sit down for an interview. And then his management, who runs, who's also a producer, Jerron, was like, hey, we'd love, you know, to see if there are other ways that Steph could be involved with this beyond just sitting down and interview. And that's something we never anticipated happening, but we were, you know, obviously very excited about.
Yeah. They were that pumped about it. They wanted to find a...
It's an inspiring story. I mean, it's something, you know, Kenny is, he is a character that I think, like, his values, his beliefs, and how he, you know, the way he teaches sportsmanship today, and you see that in the film, is something I think we so desperately need today in today's society, that it works so well, and it spans across. It doesn't matter how old you are, where you're from, you know, your gender, like, somebody's going to connect with Kenny. We've shared the film kind of all over, you know, doing screen testings in different parts of the United States. And, you know, from getting to work with screening with young people, like, you know, in New York City, who, you know, we had one guy who was like, you know, I'm kind of afraid of, like, you know, old guys who are like cowboys, you know, out in the wild, you know, doing that thing. But I love Kenny. And it's so easy to connect with him that anybody can fall in love with.
No doubt about that. And you've got quotes both in the documentary and on the website, jumpshotmovie.com, from guys like Dickie V and from Bobby Knight, saying that it's a crime that Sailors is not in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is from talking to people? Were you able to figure that out? And is there still any chance? I mean, I know it'd be posthumously at this point, but is there some way that this guy can get the credit he deserves for really revolutionizing and globalizing the game of basketball with the invention of the jump shot?
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely believe that there is still a chance that that could happen. And we're hoping that this film serves as a tool for those who, you know, have the say and have that power to make that happen. So we're really, you know, we're definitely working on something with it. And I think right now we're building out an impact campaign, that's going to coincide with the distribution of the film.
Cool.
So we're able to build up that momentum, which should work probably in time for when people are actually going to be voting for, you know, the next year. I guess it would be the 2020, Naismith Hall of Fame induction. So
as you're working toward distribution of this movie, does that involve just finding the right streaming service to release it through? Is there going to be a theatrical release in a limited sense?
Yeah, all of that is up for discussion right now.
Okay.
We don't know the specifics yet. Whenever we find the right people who we're going to, you know, partner with and help distribute the film, a lot of those questions will be answered, and mm-hmm. you know, we'll be very excited to share that information
sure.
with everybody when we find it, because obviously we want everyone to watch this inspiring film.
For sure. And for you personally, Jake, was this, you know, you said this is your first foray into directing. Is this something that you've always wanted to do, just being a part of the filmmaking process? How did, was this a childhood dream? How did this come about for you?
Yeah. So films have always spoke to me. From a very early age, like, I was always emotionally invested in any great film that I was watching. And it wasn't until I was in high school that I began to realize that I had this passion for storytelling. I grew up playing sports, and when you play sports in Texas, you know, you're kind of playing everything: football, baseball, track, swim in the summers. So I had a very full plate. And then once, you know, you start to retire from all these sports in high school, you're like, what am I going to do with my life now? And I was like, well, let's do film. This is really interesting. And that was kind of the transition for me. And specifically with film, it's something that, you know, I really, really am passionate about, and it's exciting to get to incorporate, you know, this type of storytelling in what I do. And it's a dream come true. I mean, it's something I've been doing this full time in Austin for 10 years, and doors continue to open, and I'll continue to head down this way as long as I can.
So I love asking filmmakers this question because of the variety of answers that the question begets. But you just mentioned that you love telling stories. What's the key to a good story?
Ooh, a great character.
Great character.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, Kenny is an amazing character mm-hmm. to get to work with. And
yeah.
look at how he shines in the film, and that elevates the film, you know, from that perspective. And so, I mean, I think you can obviously take somebody that maybe isn't as great of a character and still craft a story that works. Narrative and documentary filmmaking are both very different in how you have the flexibility to shape and manipulate a story. documentary, you could tell the same story a million different ways, where narrative, you're kind of following a script. And so, for documentaries, having an amazing subject that can help carry that weight on the screen is a huge asset.
And a big reason why Kenny is such a great character goes well beyond his basketball acumen. And you've touched on it in a couple of your answers, just how great a person he was. And one of the questions that you ask in that summary to try and lure people into watching the movie is why Kenny Sailors wasn't more as an NBA player. He did play in the NBA. He did well in the NBA, but his career ended pretty abruptly in terms of playing basketball in the NBA. Why is that?
Yeah, well, coming from World War II, he was already a little bit older than most people would expect somebody to enter in as a rookie in the NBA. So he was 26 when he came back and actually started playing, and he already had a family. So when he left for World War II, he was married. He had a child on the way. He came home, met his son for the very first time. And from there, he played the 5 seasons in the NBA that he got. They gave him his pension for the total of 7 years for his 2 years of service. And he decided, it's time to spend time with my family. His wife dealt with asthma and emphysema, and the cities were really tough on her. So, they're having to choose where they lived, where the air was the cleanest air that they could find. And
literally life and death for her. The doctor said that she may only have a couple of years if you got to stay in the city.
Yeah, they said, she'd be lucky to reach the age of 50, which, it's super young. And so Kenny decided, we're going to focus on what's more important here, and I'm going to concentrate on my family. And they ended up moving out of the cities and started pursuing that.
It's crazy how they met through the story of Kenny and his wife. And before we let you go, mm-hmm. Jacob, I got to ask you, clearly sports are a big part of your life. I need a favorite sports movie, because sports and film are big
man.
For you. So it doesn't have to be basketball related, but just any sports movie. You have an all-time favorite?
Yeah, probably one of the earlier sports movies that I fell in love with that we watched repeatedly in high school with our football team was Rudy.
Okay.
That's one I still watch today, and I still get worked up getting to watch it. And that's at the top of the list that comes to first to mind for me.
Good answer.
Sean Astin did a great job in that one. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Jacob Hamilton, you're a local filmmaker. You've done a great job on this new documentary, Jump Shot. BK, did you say it's jumpshot.com is the website?
It is jumpshotmovie.com.
Jumpshotmovie.com to check out the details and to stay in touch on when you can finally watch this this great film. We've had a chance to do so through the pre-screener that we were provided, and I look forward to watching this movie again, Jake. It was a fantastic film.
We're going to promote the hell out of this,
the guys' reactions to this.
Yeah.
Please make sure to let us know when those things have been finalized, and we can help you spread the word for other people getting to watch the movie, too.
Will do. Will do.
All right.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank
man.
You, guys.
A lot of fun. All right, Jacob Hamilton joining us in studio. We'll take a break. Coming up next, our man Wags behind the glass will lead us through Tinder time. It's Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Thanks again to Jacob Hamilton for joining the program to talk about his new documentary, Jump Shot. It will be out soon. We'll let you know those details when we have them. It's bracket time. Time to make your picks in the Chris Waters Big Dance Fantasy Basketball Challenge for charity on hornfm.com. Check back to see how your team stand up against Chris Waters, Bucky Godbolt, Rita Ballew, Bridget Taylor, and the guys from the Horn. Bucky, Rita, and Chris will make their picks live on March 21st at 9 a.m. on the Horn 104.9 FM, 101.9 FM, AM 1260, leading up to Game 1. All right, I'm done with this. Thank you, Chris Waters, for sponsoring our bracket challenge this year.
Too many words.
Right HornFM.com to sign up for the bracket challenge.
500 bones, dude. You win $500. If you just pick a correct bracket, you don't even have to be smart to get these right. These things are so random. This NCAA tournament is so random. I think I've won one year in my life where I've had the number one bracket in the groups that I have entered in.
Didn't your sister kill it last year just from picking mascots?
Yeah, my sister.
Because she picked the dog.
Yeah, she had UMBC over Virginia. Who the hell
the
had
retriever.
That? She had the Retrievers, man. Are you kidding me? She won her office pool like picking animals. It's absurd. She had the Wildcats at Villanova, winning it all. And it helps that she's from Kansas like I am, so she had KU going far to the Final Four. Wolverines, Loyola of Chicago, there's a dog mascot there. I think she had them going to the elite. Absurd. Absurd. Anybody can win these things. No offense, sister. Sorry. You're pretty smart, but you got lucky. But join, man. $500. It's free to enter. You get to compete against all of us. Should be a lot of fun. And I will tweet out my official bracket in 30 minutes. I'm feeling good about this one. The official bracket.
Really?
Feeling good about this
one. All right.
So get...
how many ACC teams in the Final Four?
Ready for that. Let's see here. I have zero ACC teams in the Final Four. So get ready for that.
That's the one you feel good about.
That's the one I feel good about.
Okay.
Well, we tweeted from Brad Kellner, at Brad Kellner, and at 30 minutes on at twitter.com.
When was the last time you finished number one in your bracket pool?
This would have been the year that Kentucky went undefeated but lost to Wisconsin in the semifinals. And then Duke won it all. I had Duke winning the title that year, so I was like the one person who didn't pick UK.
I feel like that was like 5 or 6 years ago.
That was, 5 years ago. I mean, I've had some good years where I finished near the top, but that was the big money-making year for me.
Okay, if you have no ACC teams this year, you're not finishing near the top.
We will see, my friend. We will see. All right, good conversation with Jake Hamilton. Appreciate him stopping by today. And we will get back and do some NCAA tournament talk. Matter of fact, in about half an hour on this program at noon, we will talk to our guy, Sam Panionovic, our Vegas expert, our handicapper. He will join us to give your cousins some advice for these first and second round, and of course the tournament winners as we get set for the Madness of March, which actually starts tonight. You've got two round of 68 games, two of the first four games tonight, and then two more tomorrow. But there is a Texas team playing over the next couple of days. So we'll tell you about that. But right now, our man Wags across the glass. It's that time for Tinder Time.
Sponsor.
Tinder Time brought to you by Altstadt Brewery. Altstadt Beer, it is German beer made here. And if you need a great beer to watch during all of the madness of March, it should be Altstadt Beer. Brewed locally, and it's available wherever you get your beer here in the 512. It is Altstadt Beer. No impurities, no regrets.
Wag, what's the first headline in today's Tinder Time?
Cincinnati cuts one of their menacing patrollers over the middle of the gridiron.
Yeah, we didn't get to this yesterday. Swipe right.
Swipe right.
Bengals cut Vontaze Burfict after 7 seasons. Obviously, we know the guy is a tremendous talent on the field, but he also comes with a little bit of baggage as well. In the past 3 years, he's dealt with some suspensions and injuries. Guys, is there a good fit for Vontaze Burfict out there in the NFL?
He's really good. I mean, yeah. He's the dirtiest player in the National
Very
Football League, and he sucks. I hate that I love watching him play. I love watching him play because he's awesome, and he plays the linebacker position just about as well as anybody in the NFL does. But this guy shows no mercy. He's just reckless out there on the football field. And
old-school player.
Has injured a lot of guys and seemingly has no care. Doesn't matter how many suspensions, how many fines Vontaze Burfict gets, he's still going to play the same way, and it's like his mission is to take off your head every time he hits you. He's only 28 years old. Believe it or not, feels like this guy's been in the league forever based off how many headlines that he's made. I think somebody will give this guy an opportunity.
I've got a team.
Okay.
The Raiders.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, anytime there's a guy who's questionable for everybody else but still has enough talent to make plays, it's Raiders at this point.
Is he a guy who's dealt with any off-the-field issues?
I don't believe so. I think it's all on the field. Correct. But he's to that point now where when he does something, it costs him, I think, multiple games.
He's been suspended by the NFL in 2016, 2017, 2018.
7 concussions, though, guys.
He's dealt with 7?
He's had himself.
Reportedly suffered 7 concussions
I feel like the concussion suffered number is like a third or a fourth of the actual number that you've probably suffered. So you want to times 3 or 4 that,
right,
then
yeah.
Maybe that makes any team
and
a little bit more
reluctant.
This
is a dude, we were just talking about how ferocious he is. He leads with his helmet. He's been fined for that as well, and this could very well be the cause of it.
Yeah, he leads the NFL in fines since 2012. I'm not sure that's something you want to lead the National Football League in, but has been fined $469,000 over the course of his NFL career since he joined the league in 2012.
Is his enforcer-type play worth it, though?
Yeah, the reason the Bengals are cutting him is because he's been injured a lot the last couple of years. With the concussions, as you mentioned, he had a hip issue that cost him to miss some time last year. And it's a new coach. You know, Zach Taylor's coming in. Marvin Lewis is finally out. I still don't believe that. I see Marvin Lewis on TV breaking down the AAF. Yeah, that dude's going to be on the sidelines somehow for the Bengals this year, right?
Who's the Bengals' new coach? Is the former quarterback coach for the Rams?
Yeah, he looked at Sean McVay. They shared a shower one time together, so he got the job.
How hilarious!
Shared a loofah.
How hilarious is that going to be? Game one for the Bengals. As soon as the team runs onto the field and the new guy runs over to the sideline, he rips his mask off, and it's Marvin Lewis again.
Hilarious for everybody outside
and
of Cincinnati.
And I would have got away with it, too, if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
Yeah, he coached straight Scooby-Doo
God, the Bengals,
on the situation.
That's got to be a rough team to root for, man.
Yeah.
Got to be. All right, one more quick one, Wags. What you got?
Rams, Bortles, finalized one-year agreement.
Good for, you know, swipe right. Swipe right.
This is really good for Bortles' tweets, too, right?
I guess. Yeah, it's good that he's on a team.
Bortles' tweets is... got to be dead.
Bortles facts. Yeah. Oh.
Bortles facts or something like that.
Tom Brady has never backed up Jared Goff in his career. How's that one for Bortles facts?
Yeah, it's just 1 year. I don't have the meat and potatoes on the you know, the salary and what the numbers are with that. But, yeah, it looks like he's found a home in L.A., man. From one coast to the
good
other.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's a backup quarterback. If you're going to be a backup, why not do it in L.A.? You know, number one, the Rams are contender. Oh, that's not number one. Number one, you get to live in L.A. And number two, you get to play on a contending team. You got a chance to perhaps win a ring if the Rams can get back to where they got last year. You knew Blake Bortles was going to find a spot. He's good enough to be a backup quarterback in this league. Mm-hmm. But
my question for you guys, though, if Goff does go down, do you think with the advent of Bortles there and the combination with the marriage of McVay, you think he could actually be a potential decent quarterback?
McVay is going to maximize his potential, and he has more weapons around him in L.A. than he ever did in Jacksonville, too. So I think if Blake Bortles is forced into action, he may surprise some people.
You sure you want to go out with that?
Yes.
You don't want to take that back. I will let you take that back right now.
I am not on the level of people who thinks that he is just atrocious at the quarterback position. I have seen him do some good things as a quarterback, and no, he is never going to be on the Brady on the level of a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or even like a Tony Romo. He is a little bit more limited physically than that, but he's a guy who can help his team win football games if he's not having to take that team on his shoulders.
He was decent when he had a healthy Allen Robinson. I'll give him that.
Take that back. Even like a Tony Romo, like that dude is a throwaway, the leading passer in the history of the Dallas Cowboys franchise. He ain't no throwaway. Blake Bortles not even close.
I know Tony Romo.
You got to go like three tiers lower, and then you say Blake Bortles is still not close to that guy. Blake Bortles is not close to Dak Prescott. Not close to Dak Prescott, dude.
No, I'd take Blake Bortles over
Dak
Prescott.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
Have you watched football at all in the last couple of years?
Yes, I have, and I've also seen how much talent Dak Prescott has had around him.
Oh, my God. Come on, man. With the receivers that Dak had before the Cooper trade? Really?
Yeah, he sucked as a thrower before that.
The year before with Dez as his number? Oh, my God.
He wasn't a great thrower that year either.
You want me to
The one year he was really good as a starting quarterback, and the times he's been good, he's had Ezekiel Elliott and a really good offensive line.
Leonard Fournette and the Jags defense and that O-line. Are you kidding me?
And they made it to an AFC championship game.
Yeah, that was Blake Bortles. All him, dog.
Blake Bortles helped them win games.
Man, all right. You
it was
go.
Also the Tiki Hut, too. That had an effect.
What's that?
The Tiki Hut that Blake Bortles was, you know, getting his pina coladas at. That had an effect on it, too. Barstool Sports, I mean.
I need to follow the Blake Bortles career a little bit closer, apparently, because that reference went over my head.
Because he's never going to be a starter in this league again.
No, he's not.
Injury, so
you
don't need to follow the Blake Bortles career any closer. Ridiculous. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, it's our audio and Dave South Homer Call of the Week. We've got a lot, including some March Madness gems as the tournament gets going tonight. And also, got to give some love to Dirk Nowitzki, who made some more history up in Big D yesterday. Good day with Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. If you are looking for some help in filling out your bracket, then stay tuned, because after the top of the hour, we're speaking with our buddy Sam Panayotovich of Brent Musburger's Vegas Stats and Information Network to get his thoughts on which games he think are going to be more chalk and which upsets he think might happen in the first round and beyond. He's also going to give us his final four picks and who he thinks ultimately takes that national championship. That's coming up at noon.
Getting close, baby.
We are, and you're going to reveal your bracket in 10 minutes?
It'll be on Twitter.
Okay.
After this segment, in the next commercial break, I will reveal the bracket you've all been waiting for.
Is that because you're including the play-in games tonight?
Including play-in games.
Okay.
Prairie View A&M. Go Panthers. Go Texas. Who the hell is Fairleigh Dickinson anyways? Who is that? That's who they're playing against.
Are you asking who the actual person is?
Is that an actual person? Is that a place? Who's Fairleigh Dickinson? No, not Fairway Faraday. Not our guy David Faraday from the Golf Channel. I'm trying to figure that one out. That's one of the two games tonight in the NC2A tournament. The other one, of course, is a matchup of 11 seeds with Temple and Belmont. Pretty intrigued to watch that one because the winner of that will move on to take on Maryland, which I could see as an upset. I don't think Maryland is very good, and 11-6 have become very, very commonplace over the last few years of the tournament. I'll give you some more numbers on that throughout the week. But the tournament technically does begin this evening.
Colonel Fairleigh S. Dickinson was co-founder of Becton Dickinson. Its original campus was located in Rutherford, New Jersey. By 1948, Fairleigh Dickinson College expanded its curriculum to offer a four-year program when the GI Bill and veterans money encouraged it to redesignate itself.
So this guy didn't do anything?
He was co-founder of the Fortune 500 medical technology company Becton Dickinson and named the benefactor of Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Guy's worthless, man. Go Prairie View.
Clearly,
I'm out on Fairleigh Dick.
You are
in sin,
not supportive of our troops, because during World War I, Dickinson was inducted into the U.S. Army Reserve as a lieutenant colonel, working with the Army Medical Corps on supplying surgical instruments. In 1926, he was appointed a member of the War Department, which is now called the Defense Department. Interesting change of names there. Business Council, with the rank of colonel. Colonel Dickinson was named chairman of the medical and surgical committees for the medical departments of both the Army and Navy in 1940 and reappointed to that post in 1944. So not only are you opposed to the troops, you are opposed to the medical treatment of troops as well with your hatred for Dickinson.
Keyword, reservist.
You didn't lead with that, number one.
I called him a colonel. What, do you think he was like Colonel Sanders?
Okay. I'd have more respect for Colonel Sanders than the guy who just started a university if he hadn't actually served. Guy makes great chicken.
Just joking to all you reservists out there.
All right. Fairleigh Dickinson and Prairie View A&M tonight. Still go Panthers. It's Audio of the Week time, brought to you by Audiovisual Consultations. Call them 255-8678. Get out to the Texas Stars game tomorrow night. I think I'm going to be there. I think Wags might be there, too. Texas Stars. It's a winning Wednesday. Get your tickets now at TexasStars.com.
You guys going to Saturday's game with Bucky?
We'll see.
All right.
Depending tournament times. Mm. It's always tough for me. All right. We do have some audio to get to, though. Let's go first. We'll start with a couple of tournament pieces of audio.
Yes.
This is a good one. This one comes from former Baylor star Torian Prince, who's now in the NBA. He's carved out a pretty decent young career for himself with the Atlanta Hawks. Really enjoy watching him play. I talked about it yesterday, how the Big 12 has fallen victim to the last three 14-3 upsets in the NCAA tournament. The last three times it's happened in the tournament has all been at the expense of a Big 12 team as the three. So watch out, Texas Tech. Recent history does not bode too well for you people. Well, a couple years ago, it was the Nerds of Yale who beat Baylor in the first round. Baylor was up by 10 with 145 to go, and they lost. Somehow, still can't figure that one out. But Torian Prince, in the post-game press conference after the game, was asked about the rebounding total because Yale out-rebounded Baylor, which is just crazy to think about. But a very stupid question from a reporter was met with a pretty priceless response from Torian Prince.
36-32. How does Yale out-rebound Baylor? You go up and grab the ball off the rim when it comes off, and then you grab it with two hands, and you come down with it, and that's considered a rebound. So they got more of those than we did.
Classic piece of audio there.
That's what you get for asking a dumb question, reporter guy. Nice work right there by Torian Prince. All right, one more college basketball audio clip. This one was after the ACC tournament in 2016. This one will never get old. Now, for the sake of time, I had to cut a little bit of the silence off here. But Dennis Clifford now plays basketball in Europe for Alba Berlin. But he played ball for Boston College, and BC doesn't make the tournament very often. They did not in 2016. When they got bounced in the ACC tournament and their season came to an end, he was asked one pretty simple question because this was his final collegiate game for BC. And, man, it took him way longer than the audio I have, but it was about 20 seconds of silence for him to think of this answer.
What are you going to take away as your best memory from playing basketball at Boston College?
Probably just, like, going out to eat.
Jeez.
Flavortown?
Going out to eat. Dude, you can still do that after you're done playing college ball.
My gosh.
You can still go out to eat, probably with the same guys if you wanted to. That was his answer. And I'm telling you, I cut out 20 seconds of silence. The dude put his head down like he was crying about to come up with the craziest answer ever.
Mm.
And that's what he's going to miss most about playing ball. So hopefully for Alba Berlin, Dennis Clifford is still going out to eat every once in a while.
We're going to stick with the college game or an audio sound bite that has to do with college basketball involving one Shaquille O'Neal, who on his TNT broadcast earlier this week, the guys answer questions from viewers, and Shaq was asked how he qualified for school, not Lori Loughlin's way, how he actually qualified for school. And Shaq gave his answer on how he ultimately passed the ACT.
Dear Inside, how did you guys get into college?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Zach, you go first.
I took the SAT twice, mm-hmm. didn't pass it, so I took the ACT rhyme style.
What do you mean, rhyme style?
Yeah, rhyme style. So when a guy came out and was giving the instructions, I would just grab the paper and I'd go A to the B. This one's C. This got to be D and another B, B. A, C, B, and an A, C, C. And I passed it.
No, did you?
I promise, yeah.
How long did it take you to take the ACT?
Well, you know how they come and say, well, this portion going to take 3 hours? It always take me 5 minutes. But Kenny, hold on.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Don't try this.
But Kenny, hold on. After I did it right, I would slam my pen like I was smart, like, it worked.
You think Shaq really did it like that?
That's absurd.
Or did Dale Brown maybe step in at that point and say, you know what? We're going to help you out with some of these answers.
Yeah,
surprised you didn't think it was culturally biased.
Is it blue chips? Just go full blue chips?
Good blue chips there, Wags.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be hilarious if that's true. Not a bad idea with your test taking. There's your tip for kids today.
A to the B and B to the C.
All right, man. How about this? We'll go with Van Gundy here.
Okay.
We'll go with Jeff Van Gundy.
Jeff Van Gundy is a Texas resident.
He
coached the Houston Rockets for a long time.
He does a very bad job not rooting for the Rockets when he broadcasts games, by the way.
Okay,
Rockets fans appreciate, but he is on a national broadcast. He does not hide his love for Houston very well.
Still lives in Houston, so I guess in a roundabout way it's sort of understandable, but you need to try and act a little bit less biased than that. But he's also not shy about hiding his love for another Texas institution. No, not Whataburger, the gas station that people literally travel to Texas to visit nowadays, and Jeff Van Gundy is fully on board with that one.
All you non-Texans that are riding along with us are going to get to witness the greatness of Buc-ee's. The greatest pit stop, supersized gas station known to man.
Why? Elaborate, at least let people know why it's
cleanliness, great food, cheap gas, everything. It's genius. I will take a drive for an hour and 45 minutes just to go to Buc-ee's. I'll turn around and come right back home to Houston. It's that good. And if there were other Texans sitting here, they'd be saying amen.
Can I make an admission on this show right now that's probably going to have people hate me more than they already do?
Tough to do.
I've never been to Buc-ee's before.
Really?
Never been.
Not once.
Not a single time.
How is that possible?
I don't know. Because Buc-ee's, here's how it's possible. Because Buc-ee's was not a thing when I moved out of the state more than 15 years, or not quite 15 years, almost 15 years ago. And by the time I came back, there were a few of them. But every time I've driven past a Buc-ee's, it's either been on the wrong side of the road because I am OCD about stopping on a gas station that is on the same side of the road for which I'm traveling.
Well, if you or go two, to Dallas really, and then back to Austin, at some point it's going to be on the right side of the road.
But I don't need gas at that point.
What about a snack?
I'm not a big...
Or a bathroom?
Not a big snacker in the car. I have the bladder of a 41-year-old man. I can hold it.
You just go in like a Gatorade bottle and throw it out your back window and hit your kids in the back seat?
No, it's more important to me to make better time than it is to stop to go to the bathroom. Although with kids now, we do stop to go to the bathroom, but I try and make those stops line up with like health camp.
You got to go, man. You got to go to Buc-ee's. I'm not like a religious Buc-ee's customer like Jeff Van Gundy apparently is, because it's just a little bit too big of a crowd for me for just the standard stop. But man, it's nice and clean in there. They've got a lot of food and clothes and all kinds of things.
All right,
let's take a break. We've got to go. We will play this Dirk audio a little bit later, as Dirk moved back into sixth place all time on the NBA's all-time scoring list last night. Coming up next, though, call your cousins. Our man Sam Paniadovich will join us from the Vegas Stats and Information Network to give his picks for March Madness. Trey and VK, this is The Horn.